There's a thing we used to say when I was in boot camp that seems kinda apt right now. The days go like weeks, we used to say, but the weeks go like days. And look, it's Friday again already. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Friday today, the 27th of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. This is going to be a macro-micro kind of half hour for you today. A bunch of big picture stuff, and then a bunch of how regular people are getting hit by that big picture stuff. And we are going to start with the past 5 days in this coronavirus economy. Catherine Rempel is at the Washington Post. Anna Swanson is at the New York Times. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
So, Catherine, let me start with you, and it spins off of something that I think you wrote about today, actually, that Governor Cuomo talked about, and that we are feeling, actually, here in my local school district. The prospect of state budgets being hit by this coronavirus, Cuomo said he's basically getting no tax revenue. My school district has been told to expect state budget cuts. There are going to be second-order effects on this thing.
Absolutely. States and municipalities are sort of getting slammed from both sides of the ledger. One is that they are seeing huge declines in revenue, right? Sales tax revenues are declining, even though people are panic buying, for example, groceries, things like that. In a lot of districts, those are exempt from taxes. Income tax revenues also expected to decline because businesses are shuttered. If you're a state like California or New York, you rely heavily on capital gains taxes. The stock markets have cratered, so capital gains tax revenues are likely to go down, etc. And then on the other side of the ledger, of course, they also have additional expenses because people are signing up for unemployment insurance. They're likely to be signing up for Medicaid, and Medicaid spending per person, per enrollee, is likely going to be higher because of the nature of this crisis. So states are really, really getting squeezed here.
And these are, real quick, Catherine, going to be effects that last well into the next year or two, yeah?
Possibly multiple years. If you look at what happened after the Great Recession, for example, I think states cumulatively had a budget shortfall of about $600 billion over the course of 5 years, just because, when economic activity is depressed, that lowers tax revenue going forward. And there are sort of these reverberating effects as well, potentially. So if you have layoffs that last a while, for example, that could eventually lead to lower property values, which could in turn lead to lower property taxes. So you could see a couple of years from now the continued reverberating effects of the economic crisis that we are enduring right now.
Anna Swanson, back to the here and now this afternoon. In fact, the president invoked, after having said he invoked it 10 days or 2 weeks ago, the Defense Production Act and ordered General Motors to make ventilators. Interesting on a whole lot of levels, not least of which is the government ordering a company to do something.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we did just hear that the president invoked this act for General Motors. It's not quite clear exactly what that means because there are a lot of different things that that the government could do under the act. In the 5 p.m. press conference today, I think the president was also expected to potentially give some names of some other companies that would be producing goods for the United States. But this has been a big question. Companies have been saying that they are voluntarily stepping forward to supply the United States with, the kinds of masks and ventilators that it needs. But those supplies have been way short of what's necessary. And so there have been increasing calls from lawmakers, mostly Democrats, Governor Cuomo in New York, really prominently saying that the government needs to take a more prominent role here in organizing what industry is doing, where those goods are channeled, and channeling the products to where they're needed most.
Yeah, and we should say here, this order comes after a Twitter screed against General Motors this morning and much inactivity on the part of the national leadership on this issue. Anna, let me stay with you for 2 seconds and talk global trade, because this is a global pandemic. Global trade will be affected. I actually had somebody tweet a question at me that basically was like, look, even if the United States was fine, the global economy's been hit as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, all over the world. And it looks like global trade is set to slow by more than it did during the financial crisis. And that's obviously going to weigh on the economy. And it could leave people around the world cut off from some goods because, you know, in addition to slowing global trade, you're actually seeing dozens of countries that are already banning the export of different kinds of medical products like face masks. Some countries are even starting to clamp down on food exports as well. So anytime you have, you know, a real crisis in the global economy, you have this temptation for leaders to go back to kind of more protectionist policies. But, you know, you have a risk here that this is going to further disrupt supply chains for a variety of different products.
Right. And we should say we were seeing protectionist policies even before the coronavirus, right? I mean, just look at the trade war.
Oh, absolutely. This is definitely accelerating. This seems to be accelerating them for sure.
Catherine, real quick. So the House has passed the $2 trillion plan. It's basically a done deal. How big is the next relief bill going to have to be? Because there's going to be another relief bill, yeah?
I think there will almost certainly be another relief bill. I don't know what the price tag will be. But you could imagine that it would include maybe another round of checks for Americans, which would be, I forget what the total amount was in this past bill. I think it was like $290 billion, maybe. So you could imagine another round of checks potentially at the same scale. You could imagine more funds for states and municipalities like we were just talking about. They really need it. And potentially more lifelines to small businesses because small businesses are just not going to get this money in time. So I don't know how you rescue all of these firms that are really on life support at this point, but I think there's going to have to be more spending going out the door.
Catherine Rempel at the Washington Post, Anna Swanson at the New York Times. Thanks, you two.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. Wash your hands. Stay safe. All that good stuff. On Wall Street today, I'm going to steal a line from Josh Brown that I saw this morning. Josh is the CEO of Ritholtz Wealth Management in New York. He's been on this show and on our morning program a couple of times. The market is not going to bottom, Josh said, until the virus tops. This week's bull market lasted about a day. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Restaurants and hospitality and travel have gotten lots of the early attention as coronavirus job losses pile up. Retailers are going to get hit, too. Not a whole lot of brick-and-mortar shopping going to be happening for a while now, right? But some are hiring. Amazon and Walmart, Kroger and CVS, to name just a couple. They are so busy that they're basically hiring armies of temporary workers to handle the spiking demand. Walmart's got 150,000 job openings. Amazon's got 100,000. So we asked Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino what it takes to ramp up a workforce when business is nowhere near what it usually is.
A lot of retailers do have experience hiring a bunch of temporary workers quickly. They do it every year for the holidays.
The difference now is you simply have to do vastly more hiring in vastly less time.
Retail consultant Joel Rampold with Alex Partners says Walmart, Amazon, and other big employers have well-oiled systems for new hires. But with the increased demand they're facing, they've got to speed them up.
There simply can't be the same level of screening that you would normally do.
A hiring process that usually takes weeks is being condensed to less than a day in some cases. Walmart is taking applications by text message and Domino's is doing video chat interviews. New workers are starting shifts before employers finish their background checks. Millions of newly unemployed people are available for work, but Andy Challenger of outplacement firm Challenger Gray & Christmas says some of them may hesitate.
The jobs they're asking people to do have this inherent risk associated with them that those jobs normally don't.
Amazon and Walmart have sweetened their offers by raising the pay for many of the jobs by $2 an hour. Meanwhile, the pandemic means employers have to do a little more work to onboard new workers, says David Marcotte with Kantar Consulting.
There is, versus previous times, an additional layer of training, which is I need to keep you safe.
But he says with sales at many retailers soaring, the added costs are probably worth it. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
So as I said, Catherine, help is now officially on the way for this economy. The $2 trillion rescue package that Congress has been working on is done. Small businesses are in line for some of that relief. Small businesses that for a couple of weeks now have been scrambling to make payroll, sort out which staff they can keep and which they can't, all while trying to keep money coming in somehow. As Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports, while Washington has been working on this deal, a whole lot of small businesses have been hanging on by a thread.
Kate Fryer is packing vials of crafting beads, wire, and accessories into boxes for shipping around the country.
I'm calling it a quarantine beading kit. So it's a project that's very simple to put together.
She usually makes her money from classes or birthday parties at A Bead Just So, her small shop in upstate New York. Those aren't happening now.
And I'm trying to get my inventory loaded up on my website, which I've never done before. So it's a brand new, really intense process.
Here in Washington, some restaurants are frantically shifting from bar and dining room service to carryout and deliveries. Mark Kerwin owns two restaurants in the area. He's doing deliveries with his mascot.
Jack,
a playful Italian Mastiff puppy who's bigger than most full-grown dogs.
At times like this, when you're in the doldrums, I just look at him and his face and it brings a bit of warmth into you, you know what I mean?
Warmth he's needed after laying off his staff. Kerwin figures he can only hang on another month or so.
There's some days we're doing $300-$400 in sales compared to, you know, $15,000-$20,000.
Other small businesses are pulling in even less. Shobha Tamala owns a chain of hair removal salons in Maryland, D.C., and New York. She says she's making a little off online sales and gift cards, but it doesn't really make a dent with rent coming due.
You would have to sell, you know, $100,000 worth of gift cards for it to make a real significant difference. And so that's not going to happen.
Tamala laid off her almost 100 employees last week in a series of video conference calls.
I wanted to see everybody. I wanted everybody to see me. They rely on me to take care of them. And so it can get emotional.
The new aid package could help people like Tamala cover rent and expenses. But without customers, even that will only go so far to keep companies in business. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
The U.S.-Canadian border has been closed to non-essential traffic for almost a week now. To be clear here, most trade, big picture, is still happening. But the border communities on both sides, places where people cross frequently for groceries and other basics, well, those communities are suffering, as Emma Jacobs reports.
Soon after the border closure was announced, Canadian customers stopped coming to the Borderview Grocery in Champlain, New York.
It's changing all here on these border towns.
Robin Gooley is the store's owner.
It's all new to everybody right now, right? We're just trying to get a grip.
Some Canadians shop in the U.S. for convenience because that's where they can find the closest stores. Others come to get staples like bread and milk that have been cheaper on the U.S. side. Those Canadians help sustain some stores on the northern edge of Vermont, says Aaron Sigrist, president of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association.
A good 45% of their customers have come from over the border.
The initial cross-border travel restrictions agreed to by the U.S. and Canada are for 1 month. But Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said when he announced the plans,
these measures will last in place as long as we feel that they need to last.
In Vermont, Sigrist says, that leaves a lot of small businesses already concerned about their survival with a lot of uncertainty.
Worst case scenario, you know, we're in this situation for several months, you know. I'm not going to go past several months. I don't allow myself to do that.
Small businesses on the Canadian side of the border are also seeing changes. Doug Harper says he normally has 50 or so American customers who come from Maine to his pet store in St. Stephen, New Brunswick for specialty foods. In the run of a week, he says,
that's a lost sales to me of $500, $600. And that's, as a small business, that's an employee's paycheck, right? Or my paycheck.
For now, he's making those numbers up with extra sales to Canadian customers. Some of them have been buying pet food in bulk.
It's been kind of a mixture. I've lost clients, but I've also gained a lot of clients because of the shortages in grocery stores and them not being able to go across the border.
The travel restrictions include exemptions for essential employees like healthcare or agricultural workers who have to cross the border to get to their jobs on the other side, and for truckers transporting goods between the two countries. In Montreal, I'm Emma Jacobs for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I've just been using this app called Basketball GM. It's kind of a simulator of an NBA franchise.
How are you going to keep them involved in the game when there's nothing to see on TV? But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down 915 points, 4%, closed to 21,636. Interesting that a 4% loss doesn't get you the Wawas anymore, huh? The NASDAQ down 295 points. That is 3.7%, 7502. The S&P 500 down 88 points, 3.3%, 25.41 there. For the week, the Dow posted its biggest weekly percentage gain since 1938. The NASDAQ and the S&P posted their biggest weekly percentage gain since March 2009, or the beginning of the now-forgotten bull market. This week, the Dow up more than 12%, the NASDAQ banked 9%, the S&P 500 up 10% this week. Bond prices, well, they rose. People are buying them. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 0.67%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. This has been quite a week for the Federal Reserve, quite a couple of 3 weeks, actually, in which the Fed cut interest rates a lot and said to basically all comers, hey, you want to borrow money? Sure, we got money. So we got Rob Kaplan on the phone. He's the president of the Dallas Fed, also a voting member of the Federal Open Market Committee this year. Mr. Kaplan, it's good to talk to you again, sir.
Good to talk to you, Kai.
So we tried, I guess it was last week, to get a hold of you, and your office said, I'm sorry, he's really busy right now, which in retrospect I get. What were you doing? What were those conversations like as you worked on these packages that the Fed has rolled out?
Well, I'm obviously part of a large team at the Fed. What we were talking about is what were the stresses in the economy and a whole range of markets. And what were some of the things that needed to get done in order to ensure that businesses had availability of capital so that they can make it through this challenging period?
As I'm sure you've seen, Mr. Kaplan, the House has today passed its it's one bill now, the $2 trillion rescue package. That was the third rescue package this Congress has passed in this crisis. Do you think there's going to be a fourth, and how big does it have to be?
I don't want to get into what the Congress might do in fiscal policy, but I'll say this. What's happened so far between monetary and fiscal policy is we've stepped in on fiscal policy. The government has stepped in to make sure that individuals who've either lost their jobs, who are otherwise sick, or independent contractors, small businesses, get relief during this period. In addition, the Fed has taken all the actions to ensure that the markets function properly and that businesses are able to have access to capital. And I would call all these things relief, meaning they're not necessarily stimulative. They're intended to give relief to all these constituencies in the economy so that they can make it through this crisis.
Scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you?
I would say I'm cautiously optimistic, so I don't know where what number that shows up on your scale. I think we've got a daunting challenge in that we've never had a period where you've got this percentage of the workforce that's not working. And so it's unprecedented to be shutting down the economy this way. And so we're going to have a very big drop in GDP in the second quarter and part of the third quarter. The concern I have still, how will the economy behave as we first walk, then run, then try to sprint out of this in the aftermath of the virus, meaning consumers are going to behave differently. Businesses are going to relook at, are we the right size? Do we have the right number of people? We've had a consumer-driven economy heading into this. It's been the cornerstone of the economy, and the consumer here probably has taken somewhat of a body blow and is going to need to recover from what's going on right now.
Seems to me that's a key point. This thing happened so very fast, but the recovery likely will not happen as fast.
The recovery may well take time, and in particular, we think in the short run there's going to be a spike up in unemployment. You saw unemployment claims yesterday. We think then after that spike, we'll work it back down. But even by the end of the year, we'll still have an elevated level. We'll have a higher unemployment rate than we did going into it, and we'll have to spend 2021 working that down. That'll be a different situation, very different than the one we've been experiencing the last two or three years.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go, sir. I was surprised last time we talked to learn that you all actually fly to Washington for the regularly scheduled meetings of the Federal Open Market Committee. I'm just kind of hoping and cross my fingers here that y'all are being careful and there's a lot of video conferencing going on now.
The last two meetings were both done by video. And my guess is that's liable to continue.
Yeah, you and me both. Rob Kaplan, he's the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Ms. Kaplan, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Good to talk to you, Kai.
Well, here we are, another weekend without sports. Woulda, coulda, shoulda been in the middle of March Madness. Pro basketball in the National Hockey League would have been in the playoff hunt. Baseball's opening day would have been yesterday. And a lot of you would have been watching it all go down. So to put an economic lens on this, how are people allocating their not-so-scarce right now resource of time while things are shut down? From Austin, Texas, Marketplace's Andy Euler checked in with some sports fans who've got some time on their hands.
Pro golfers should be in Austin right now competing in the Dell Match Play Tournament. Fans should be buying T-shirts and expensive beers.
It's usually perfect weather, which it is right now.
Chad Smith has been to every Dell Match Play since 2016.
We've got the blue bonnets starting to bloom, and it's a perfect time to be walking around a golf course.
Except canceled. He'll watch last year's tournament on the Golf Channel instead. That's a common thread among sports fans, a lot of old games on their go-to channels. Dennis McWilliams has been watching a lot of Longhorn Network. That's an ESPN channel that shows University of Texas stuff.
I applaud ESPN and Fox Sports for what they're trying to show us, but, you know, it's not our normal fare. So, you know, we've got the Longhorn Network here, which is a lifesaver right now for us in the McWilliams house.
Just so happens that McWilliams can watch himself on the Longhorn Network sometimes. He played linebacker for the football team in the 1990s. He and his two sons would be watching a lot of college basketball right now during March Madness, but instead they're playing a lot of sports video games like Madden Football. That's how Lee Tran's getting his sports fix, too. He's an English major at Earlham College.
I've just been using this app called Basketball GM. It's kind of a simulator of an NBA franchise.
With Basketball GM, you sign and trade players. You have a salary cap and a budget to build your arena and locker rooms.
It's not perfect, but it's something to do.
Something to do. That's what Eileen Garvey of Dallas wants. Normally, she'd be watching Dallas Mavericks basketball games or Texas Rangers baseball games with her family. Now?
We have been punching in movies and basically TV, you know, at night when the sports were on.
But she's really worried about missing Cowboys games.
I just pray that it's going to be all out of here before football season starts.
If this were a normal year, the first NFL game would be played September 10th. But the football season, like everything else, is up in the air. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, to which we can all relate, as I think you'll see. A Walmart executive was on Yahoo Finance yesterday talking about what's going on for them in this work from home, do all your meetings on Zoom economy. And he said, quote, "We're seeing increased sales in tops, but not bottoms. So people are concerned, obviously, from the waist up." Me right now? Fully dressed? Maybe. All right, we got to go. The Dow off 915 points today, 4%. The NASDAQ down 295 points. That is 3.7%. The S&P 500 gave back 88 points, 3.3% there. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Deborah Clark is the Senior Vice President and General Manager. And a word here about the people who have been getting our shows literally on the air the past week or two and for the foreseeable future from a tiny room attached to my garage at my house right now. David Brancaccio set up at his house and all of our reporters in whichever nice quiet bedroom closet they are recording their work. Stephen Sculler on our broadcast ops team, Ian Adams in IT, all of our media producers, you hear their names here in the program on Wednesdays. I know I'm forgetting somebody and I apologize, but believe me, without them, there would be a whole lot of dead air here and all over public radio. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Stay safe this weekend, everybody. We are back on Monday. This is APM.